Good day, good night, and welcome to World Cup Today. Wow, a lot of news to talk about this morning, Dwayne. And of course, the biggest news of them all is NYCFC U19 champion of the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's a vital one. It's pretty good news for NYCFC. Yeah, a lot of talent in the New York area, but we got, that'd be easy to say, we got England in a World Cup semifinal for the first time in 28 years. That's a thing. And we've got France qualifying for the World Cup final for the
Third time in 20 years, if you look at it that way.
Yeah, and Ronaldo. Woo. Yeah, Ronaldo being transferred to Juve. Yep.
Jesus.
A few things.
Like 20 minutes before it dropped officially, I was shopping and I found like an old school Kappa Juventus type jersey. I'm like, should I get it? I should have, because 20 minutes later, it was made official. Cristiano Ronaldo, once again, diverting all the headlines. Never mind France-Belgium. Everyone was talking about. After the game, people were talking about France-Belgium, and we'll review the game later on. But Ronaldo to Juve is done. What's Ronaldo's legacy with Real Madrid? 450 games, 400 and something goals, 4 Champions League, two La Liga titles. Yeah, 33 years. He literally destroyed the record of Chiellini for a transfer over the age of 30, which was 38 million. Now it's 188. And, you know, I still think it's a bargain. I still think it's not that expensive for Ronaldo.
No, well, I mean, I think it's an absolute bargain when you look at the overall package. And, I mean, you have to look at this both on and off the pitch, right? Juve bought Ronaldo all for commercial reasons as much as football reasons. Let's put the commercial reasons up front first and talk about the football reasons, which are more obvious second. I mean, Juve was struggling a little bit. All of Serie A does not have the same revenue sources as La Liga, as the Premier League. And I think that that's sort of showing itself a little bit on the pitch now. Juve, they're kind of stale for a lot of people in the sense that that Serie A has not been that engaging. I mean, Napoli gave them a bit of a run for a while, but ultimately Juve was able to just pull away and do what they've done. Was it 5 years in a row now? So 5 or 6? I forget.
Seven.
So like
seven. Seven Serie A title.
There you go.
Scudetto. Seven Scudetto. Yeah. That's insane. And, well, breaking news. Juventus wins the 2018-2019 Scudetto.
Yeah, it's becoming the Scottish Premier League. I mean, when you look at the fall of Milan, right? And that's really what it came down to, was the Milan teams, particularly AC Milan, which has been booted out of Europa. We haven't even talked about that. That fall has created this vacuum, which Juve has filled. And really, you need to do other things to try and generate excitement. You don't want Serie A to turn into the Scottish Premier League, as I said, with Celtic, you know, winning every year by June, basically. I mean, yeah. I know they're not playing in June, but they might as well.
Might as well. You're right.
Yeah, and so this adds a little excitement there. Yeah.
By the way, Dwayne is on location, of course. Unfortunately, for prior commitments, sometimes we have to do what's best for everyone, and we got Dwayne online, so this is best we're going to get, and we're happy to have Dwayne on the line, as always. And Dwayne, when I'm looking at yesterday and the transfer and Juventus, there's one side of that story that I don't think is getting enough play. Let's face it. Ronaldo, biggest superstar in soccer right now, literally, and already touted and announced as the cover athlete of FIFA 19, the regular edition. There's going to be a fat Ronaldo on another edition, but regular Ronaldo is going to be the cover athlete. And in a way, Juventus just bought the cover of FIFA 19. And for me, it might seem just a trivial aspect, but this is the first year FIFA and EA Sports has the rights to the Champions League. And having the branding of the Champions League on top of that box, add the Juventus jersey and Cristiano Ronaldo's face, Juventus will be one of the clubs that has the most amount of visibility when it comes to late September, beginning of October. And that publicity has a price to it. And I think that 188 million euros that is cost for getting Ronaldo, add that with the amount of jersey sales that it will do, and literally the transfer is already paid.
No, pretty close to, yeah. And you look at other aspects too. certain markets in the world look at this sport a little differently than we look at it. And I'm particularly thinking of the Asian markets. And we've seen studies that have shown this, is that Asian fans are more geared towards the stars. They cheer, they follow stars around. They don't have clubs in the same way that we do, as they stick with through thick and thin. Soccernomics demonstrated this quite well with numbers. So this is another aspect to it. When you look at how Juve tried to rebrand for a more youthful millennial look, I think it looks terrible, but I'm not a millennial. So there you go, right? So they tried to do stuff like that to reach out. I think getting Ronaldo is an effort for them to reach out to some of those markets, like in Asia, where they follow the superstars around and start to sell more of those black and white strips in China, in Korea, in where have you, right, where they do follow the stars around, as I said, and Ronaldo is absolutely massive in those markets. So it's all part of that global strategy that, that Juve really has engaged. Juve now doesn't look at itself, I don't believe, as a Serie A team. It looks at itself as a world's team that happens to play in Serie A, which is how, you know, Real Madrid would look PSG. At itself, you know, there are, PSG, those clubs.
Yeah, PSG is a good example, too, because of the fact that, of course, they're dominating their league, usually, of course, Monaco 2 years ago with a certain Kylian Mbappe. I don't know if you heard of this kid. He's pretty good at the game with Mbappe. They shocked the world in Paris. But, yeah, you're right. And clubs like Real Madrid has to evolve. And when you look at it, it's pretty much good for all the parties involved. And let's just look at the timeline of how it happened. Of course, about 2 weeks and a half ago now, it wasn't media. He wasn't talked about that much, but the price tag of Ronaldo's release clause was reduced from €1 billion to 125 million euros, or around that area. And he took offense to that, Cristiano Ronaldo. He wanted to renegotiate his contract for the last couple of years. His last contract was signed in 2016, and he thinks he deserved more money now with everything that he's brought to the club and the success that he did have. And Florentino Perez and the front office of Real Madrid were not necessarily keen on doing that. And at the in Ronaldo's mind, of his price tag being lowered, then you're looking at yourself with maybe a way to find a new club. And apparently, Jorge Mendes, who is the agent of Cristiano Ronaldo, contacted two other big teams. Apparently, the phone rang in Paris for PSG. And apparently the phone rang in Manchester United. And apparently both teams declined. And Ronaldo found a way to seduce Juventus and let them pay big bucks to get Ronaldo in. And I think it's not necessarily a stranger to that famous night in 2013 when the entire stadium applauded Ronaldo for an amazing bicycle kick, a two-goal performance and one assist in a Champions League game. And I think he mentioned after this game that he always loved Juventus anyways. As a kid, it was one of the teams that he used to watch. So all those little tidbits of information added together, it kind of makes sense. Even though we were surprised when it started to leak about a week and a half ago, it still kind of makes sense now.
Yeah, no, the boxes check off for sure. Look, I was Ronaldo cheering for Juve as a little Ronaldo. Who knows? I mean, they're going to say stuff like that. I don't think that's really relevant. But when you look at the PSG, it surprises me a bit on PSG that they weren't willing to pull the trigger on that. That suggests to me maybe they do have a little bit of consideration for financial fair play, and we're a little concerned about that. They're I don't know how the hell they're possibly going to match that when you look at their numbers, but nonetheless, they'll figure a way out. But maybe that might have played a role in there. United doesn't surprise me at all, because I just don't think the way that they're structured right now would allow them. Plus, look, he is not a long-term play for these clubs. He is a short-term play. And I'm on location at the airport, and that's what you're hearing there. But at any rate, they're not a long-term play. But for Juve, I think if they just need that little nudge to get themselves some relevancy in, like I said, some of those emerging markets, and to take that final step in a Champions League, that might be what they think that they need. And look, this is a good club that will go deep in the Champions League next year. And you have that difference maker in Ronaldo, maybe you can take that last step. And certainly, it's a double whammy too, because you're taking that that difference maker away from the three-time defending champion too. So it works both ways.
Who's the happiest guy yesterday? Gareth Bale or Dybala? Dybala will have a brand new playing partner that might help him break through that final glass ceiling. But for Gareth Bale, he finally might be the man.
Yeah, well, and Bale was on his way out if they didn't make some kind of provision to see him play more. He was quite open about the fact that he's was being a proper Welsh, Great British guy, in that he was not making big noise about it outside of just sort of internally, but it was well known that he wanted playing time and probably would have moved on somewhere had he not been able to get it. This should open it up there. I don't think Gareth Bale's a brilliant footballer. I mean, he's single-handedly drove Wales to the semifinals of the European Championships 2 years ago, right? This is a guy that has scored, you know, one of the greatest goals in Champions League history earlier this year. This is a brilliant player that could absolutely do similar things to what Ronaldo does, but no one does what Ronaldo does. So this is going to be, even at 33, a slight step back for Real Madrid, but it's going to allow them, you know, it's not $1 billion, but still a lot of money that they well reinvest back into that club. And because this is not a club that exists to make money. Well, they do make money, but doesn't exist to make as much money as they possibly can, because they do invest a lot in players, and they will. That's what they're going to demand it. And it will be interesting to watch whether this is an immediate thing. They're still very, very good. Or whether there is a significant drop back in, you know, does it allow Atleti, a club that has continuity, to challenge them to finish above them again next year and maybe go deeper in there? Does it allow Barcelona to break through on the Champions League side, because, you know, certainly they have been dominated on the league side some more. And I mean, Barca, right? Barca's making some adjustments too.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting next year in Spain, I think. And, you know, I'm not willing to put any money down on this, but I look at Barca making some transitions. I look at Real Madrid making some transitions now. I look at the stability at Atletico Madrid, and I think that there is, and some other teams that are emerging too, that might be able to knock some points off those big clubs, that this might be another year where Atleti could challenge a little bit to maybe get up there. Everything would have to go perfect for them. Let's not kid ourselves. But I, you know, if you're going to put a pound or a dollar down on a real big long futures bet, maybe Atleti winning La Liga next year might not be your worst investment of, you know, $5-6.
And just quickly to finish on the ramifications of this move from Cristiano Ronaldo for both Juventus and Real Madrid. Gonzalo Higuain is expected to be on his way out of Juventus now with the presence of Ronaldo. And if you look at how Madrid used Ronaldo in the Champions League this year in the end, and if you look at how Portugal used Ronaldo with success in the group stage in the World Cup, Ronaldo as a striker might be what's best for the future. You don't need to overexert him by having him run way too much. Put him as your best finisher in your club, because guess what? He's the best finisher in any single club right now. So having him used this way might be the exit sign for a Gonzalo Higuain. And for Real Madrid, like you mentioned, they're not necessarily resting on their money, and that money will burn a big fat hole in their pocket, maybe a hole big enough to fit a Belgium player named Eden Hazard.
Yeah. Well, link anyone in the world to Real Madrid is possible, unless they played for Barcelona at one point. That's really the only caveat you have when it comes to who Real Madrid can sign, right? Like, they're fully capable to get anyone out there. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this money, and will they invest it immediately, or will they take a pause before they, you know, reflect? That's not been, well, it has been their way, and, you know, it used to be back 7-8 years ago, Real Madrid was just spending willy-nilly, and they were just grabbing the shiniest thing on the shelf. And they have sort of, I think, tried to piece that team together a little more thoughtfully. You know, it's all in context. It's still Real Madrid. They're going to get really shiny, thoughtful pieces. But they're put a little more thought into it, I think, than just buying everything and anything and buying things, you know, just because they look nice. It's, as I said, La Liga hasn't been this interesting to me in a few years with the changes that we're seeing, the evolution. I mean, Barca is still the team to beat league-wise, but this is going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting few years, I think, in La Liga too, because, you know, eventually Barcelona is going to have to plan for the Messi transition, which could be Messi.
It could be Messi. And let's not forget, Real Madrid has performed amazingly in the Champions League. 4 out of the last 5, they won 3 in a row, but La Liga hasn't come as easy for Real Madrid. And if you look at the sample size of a La Liga versus Champions League, you need to have more consistent results over a longer period of time. And looking at the roster of Real Madrid, to be quite honest, it's a roster that is not that young. And we're seeing this game evolve so quickly with the likes of Mbappe and just Griezmann. He's barely mid-20s. So you do see this world evolving really quickly. And having to plan the post-Ramos, post-Casemiro, many players, Benzema is not that young. So you have to prepare the next crop of Galacticos for Real Madrid, and this might be the first step towards that.
The Griezmann rumors and links are going to continue until he signs some kind of outrageous. They're always going to happen because he's right there too, right? And he put a video out. He's committed to Atleti. They are rivals, but it's not. There isn't the same sort of resistance towards dealing with them that there would be with a Barca player. So I think that's going to be a player that's going to continue to be linked to all the big clubs, but Real Madrid in particular, simply because proximity. He's right there.
Literally.
And grabbing them off the crosstown rival is something that they're going to be looking to do, and he would fit into that very, very well. Look, Real Madrid, they're never going to, slump or something. They drop, it's
third.
They're only like at a...
Third or fourth is a bad season for them.
I was going to say, I don't know FIFA rankings, what the clubs are ranked, but what is 100 is the top of the club could be in FIFA. They're, a 97 when they're slumping, basically.
Exactly. All right, speaking of Griezmann, let's talk about France. Belgium, 1-0 victories for Les Bleus. Les Bleus, de retour en finale de la Coupe du Monde. Back in the final of the World Cup, France 1, Belgium 0. And you know what really I was shocked by? Is Belgium's response after the game. Eden Hazard saying, I'd rather lose with this Belgium team than win with this French team that doesn't even want to play football. Well, guess what, sir? Guess what, Thibaut Courtois? It's not how you play the game. It's what's the score at the end. No one remembers how it was won. People just remember who won the World Cup.
Well, didn't he make a Champions League final with that Atleti anyway.
Exactly. And didn't he win the Premier League with Antonio Conte in a very defensive... Didn't he just win 2 years before with Jose Mourinho playing anti-attacking football? Yeah, you can't really throw stones when your house is made of glass.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I get the frustration. And that's a thing that often players will do, that they didn't want to play football. They didn't want to play with this, but... This is what I said yesterday about France, is that I have a hard time seeing them losing this World Cup, and had a hard time seeing them losing this World Cup from the quarterfinals on, because the way they were winning. They aren't winning pretty, but that tells me that they can win any way they need to. They're immensely talented. They beat Argentina 4-3, right?
Yeah.
They opened up. And that was, they allowed 3 goals, and it got a little touchy at the end. And I think that they learned a lesson from that. And apparently, after the Argentina game, said, go out, have fun, boys. No curfew tonight, whatever. And they showed up at 3 in the morning and took the fire hose off the wall of the hotel and had a water fight with it. So seems like there was a little bit of champagne, because they're French, flowing that night. So they sort of, I think, have a good camp thing going on, too. Not that we're advocating destroying hotels if they can afford it, though.
Please don't. But you're right, though. And we're seeing videos of Kylian Mbappe having fun with a Matuidi on the bus today, this morning really early. Matuidi's still sleeping because he might have stayed out a bit too late yesterday. And he's there, and Mbappe's doing his famous pose with his arm under his armpits and just next to him and being like, yep, my revenge time, Those little moments are really interesting to me, because it does give you a bit of a window in the mentality of the team. And right now, if you just look at that mentality, the performance, but more... The putting the team first in your priorities in this tournament. It's not just about Griezmann scoring. It's not about Giroud. Giroud was tracking box to box, 6 yards to 6 yards in the last 30 minutes to play defensively. As a striker, as a pure number 9, he was coming back to help. And those little moments, those little sacrifices by players go a long way. And Kylian Mbappe... I saw your tweet yesterday. Usain Bolt versus Mbappe. Who you got? Well, if it's with a ball at its feet, Usain Bolt has no chance.
Exactly. I mean, you did give that base speed, and apparently he's faster. But I suspect it would, on the track, it would take some time for him to catch up to Bolt. Maybe now, though, because Bolt really hasn't been in hard training for a while. But under the grass, maybe not so much, because there's a different element to that. But they're very fast. Is the point. And that's such a it's such a weapon, and it fits. France is playing a hybrid right now. They're not playing purely low block counter. They're not playing purely possession attack. They're playing something in between, and it's really been very effective. And Mbappe's speed has been a key component to it. He has probably been, even though he didn't even start the first game, he's probably been their most valuable player in this tournament to me. And this is you're saying a lot when you look at the talent on that team, right?
Yeah.
And you know, he's going to get, how much is he going to get when he transfers?
And it could happen.
But yeah,
it could happen way earlier than we think, because there's rumors coming out of Paris now that the relationship with Neymar and Neymar's side of the locker room and Mbappe is not really good. They've actually been bullying, apparently, Mbappe, cutting up his shoes, making fun of him, making fun of all the things. And, well, that might not bode well for Paris Saint-Germain, because Madrid needs a player. So Mbappe could become Real Madrid very, very soon. But Mbappe, it's
well,
not... go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, look, Real Madrid, the obvious location. City was linked to him. They were hard after him last year, too. They made an announcement that they were no longer pursuing him for this transfer window, which suggests to me that they've been told that he has other plans, and they're either to stay in Paris or to move to Real Madrid. So, you know, when you're talking about a club like City bowing out at that point, it's really about the uber rich that are only going to be involved in this, and that's really only two teams. And so there you go.
But to continue with Mbappe, his work rate, his qualities, it's not just getting the ball and going overtaking defenders, is installing fear into the defenders too, and it starts with the midfielders. You see Mbappe running at you, you're already on your back foot because you know he's going to overtake you, so you're already almost preparing to track back, and you're beat before he gets there. He gets the ball on the sideline, he just puts the ball around you, and he might run around you as well to go get it back. All those little moves that he does, that heel pass to himself and a back heel pass to Giroud. Giroud couldn't finish that move, but that move was beautiful, and it could have led to a goal maybe 9 times out of 10. If it was Griezmann instead of Giroud, this would have been a non-issue. But yeah, those little movement, those little play on, off the ball, his speed, and the fact that defenders are fearing him now, he creates more space for other players. And all those little things added up together, his maturity on the pitch, yes, he has to sometimes be a bit more cognizant of how maybe he handles a bit of his flopping, but this has been a theme for Neymar and for the World Cup this year as well a bit. But it's kind of fair game late at the end, you know. I don't know how to explain it. It is what it is. But his awareness of his qualities and not being afraid to put himself in a situation where he can just outrun players, it's quite fascinating to me.
Yeah, and look, that's an asset that will only decrease in time, right? So he's young, yes, but I think that you have to strike now with him. I mean, his peak powers are going to come in the next 3-4 years. So if you're a top club and you're going to spend a great deal of money, you might as well get him in 19, because you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough, right? And you get him in there immediately, and you take a full utilization, because sprinters, which is essentially what we're saying here, peak around 24. So you've got a few good years of an incredible amount of pace and speed and explosiveness with a player that is already finishing fairly well and can only improve in that aspect of his game too. This is a player that, you know, we talk about that third best player in the world, who's going to be the next, you know, world player of the year after they finally, the two boys finally give it up, and that's going to happen sooner or later. He's a good bet for the next guy to win Ballon d'Or. Absolutely.
Should we go there? The heir apparent to the double-headed monster that has been dominating the world of soccer for the past 15 years, could Mbappe be the next Messi, next Ronaldo? I hate to say this, because there'll never be anything quite similar to what we're experiencing, but Mbappe could be the biggest star on the planet in the making. Let's finish the show quickly, Dwayne, with a bit of a Three Lions talk. It's Sweater Vest Wednesday around the world. If you're in England, I hope you're wearing your sweater vest. This afternoon, England is participating in their third ever semi-final of a World Cup. Once before, they made it to the final, a certain evening of 1966 against Portugal. Goal by Charlton, 2-1 victory for England. Today is history being written all over again.
So many so many jokes, so many sneers, but all those oh-so-nears, they wear you down through the years, you know, the rest of the song. Is football coming home? Well, I think football's home enough already. And it's been, you know, England hasn't really played a team that presents the challenges that Croatia does yet in this World Cup. So this will be a new obstacle for them. I would favor Croatia over them just a little bit, but this is absolutely their best opportunity and probably will be their best opportunity for 20 more years to get to a World Cup final. So, wear the sweater vest, get the St. George crosses out there, get everything you need to do to celebrate this game because, you know, football's always been home. England will always be home to football. But in terms of the cheese ball 90 song, there's, you know, it will be sung in the streets today. I am working a contract job. That's where I'm on location. So I cannot be in the pubs this afternoon, which is probably good for my liver.
Yeah, maybe. For mine. I'll be at Bergen Ulayan. Come and say hello if you find me.
I have a good friend. Her name's Hannah. People that know me in Toronto will know who Hannah is. And we always get in trouble together at England games and big European games. So I take this is a shout out to her. Try and, you know, cut it off around 6 today, Hannah, so that you can make work tomorrow. But other than that, it's going to be a fun day for anyone of English and English heritage. I'll tell you, on the game on the weekend, which was a weekend game, so that's going to be even crazier. It started at 10 o'clock local time where I am now. I got to the pub at 9:15. I was the third last person to get in. That's how packed it was. And we were that bar was the third bar within walking distance around. And we were getting overflow people coming from the other two bars that were saying the same thing. So you're talking 1,000, 1,500 people just in that like little, you know, West Queen West and up to Dundas kind of area, if you know the city of Toronto. So it's sort of the hipster area of town, was just packed with England fans. And everywhere I looked, even yesterday, I saw people, you know, driving around with their England jerseys on. And we're talking people with accents and Canadians with heritage like that. I think they've estimated there's 25,000, you know, direct English expats in the city of Toronto. There's about four times that have, you know, direct familial ties to the city, to back home. So as much as Toronto is that city of many cultures, there is no bigger expat community, no bigger, you know, one generation beyond community than the England fans. So at least in this city, it's going to be absolutely mental this afternoon, and I can't even remember imagine what it's going to be like on the island. You saw the videos out there. It's only going to get crazier if they make the final.
Yeah, you saw the video of the Champs-Élysées yesterday with like 4 million people there. That was insane too. That's what I sometimes tell people, like, yeah, you think you get it, but then look at this. Now you grasp the reality of the beautiful game. And we'll be back tomorrow to talk about, maybe tonight. We'll might be a little special show tonight. We'll see what we can muster up. But we'll come back very soon to talk about England, Croatia, and the second semifinal of the 2018 World Cup. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larme. Visit sportsinspired.ca to get your World Cup-inspired collection and as well the Tour de France-inspired collection for all you cycling fans out there. And as always, until tomorrow, or maybe later this evening, have a great soccer.